is everything. Did you remember to sleep? What a surprise. Let's talk and let's laugh, cause I got so much to tell you. So let's go kick some art, art, art. Go kick some art, art, art. Go kick some art, art, art. Welcome.
Kia ora and welcome to Kick Arts with Emma and Stephen, New Zealand's comprehensive art show brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcasts, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz. Tonight we have a great variety lined up for you as we chat theatre, books, Kiwi music and everything in between. Remember, you can stay in touch and support us at kickarts.org.nz. To kick the show off, here is Lisa Crawley's latest offering, Terminal Velocity.
Sometimes it is quiet, sometimes much too loud. Sometimes I try to find it alone inside a crowd. Terminal velocity, race for
thank you.
And that was our wonderful friend Lisa Crawley with one of her latest numbers, Terminal Velocity. Still turning out the music from LA. Doing great, Lisa. Well, Emma, another week, another lockdown, another Zoom session, Groundhog Day, here we are.
Yeah, it's quite weird, isn't it? This week, of course, we were plunged into the fear of going back to level 4 here in Tamaki Makaurau. And then we're appeased by the fact, I'm not sure if appeased is the right word, that we were staying in level 3.1 for another 2 weeks.
Yeah. And by the time we go to air, hopefully some clarity around when schools go back and things like that, because there's still a lot of uncertainty, but hopefully things are getting clearer. But yeah, it is feeling long, isn't it?
It sure is. And, you know, you kind of start to feel guilty, though, when you talk to people, say, in Australia, like, actually, now that we're on air on the Sunday, on Thursday, of course, Melbourne's lockdown stopped early. So, you know, Melbourne and Sydney are now out of lockdown.
Sydney Theatre's opening up this weekend.
It sure is. And man, aren't there some amazing shows coming out in Australia?
I know. You just want that Trans-Tasman bubble back so you can jump on a plane and finally have a holiday. But the risk is, knowing our luck, we'd get stuck over there.
Yeah, but what is it? Moulin Rouge, Jagged Little Pill,
Hamilton.
9 to 5, Hamilton,
Frozen,
Come From Away.
Yeah.
My God, what a country to be in to see some phenomenal. Let's have fingers crossed that once that Trans-Tasman bubble does open, that imagine if all of them do jump the ditch.
I know. And hopefully, you know, if you think of our interview last week, chatting around what different alert levels may look like, we might have big venues like Civic able to host some decent numbers if they have that 1 meter rule in place. Yeah, fantastic. So it's a real mix, isn't it, tonight? There's some hope, but there's also some cancellations.
There sure is. And then, of course, there's the talk of mandates and what's going to happen with that vaccine passport.
Absolutely. All right, let's kick the show off. We've got another real roller coaster ride of variety tonight. So here's our first interview for you to enjoy. And now I'm delighted to chat to Kyle Sattler and Emma. The media release says Dance Gloom Merchant We Will Ride Fast returns with their new single and video, Bulletproof. Now, I want to start off, Kyle, welcome to the show, by asking, what is Dance Gloom?
Dance, I think that's actually a quote. I'm trying to think who gave me that quote, and it was danceable gloom rock, and I've sort of altered a little bit for that press release, because, you know, you try and come up with a catchy phrase. What is the catchy phrase? How on earth do you describe your own music, you know? So
brilliant. Well, welcome to the show, and tell us a little bit about We Will Ride Fast.
Well, We Will Ride Fast is my current musical project. It's one of a few projects, some in music, some in arts. It started in 2015 when I moved from Auckland to Tauranga for new opportunities, and I just started afresh. I guess that's really the crux of it. It's just it's a solo project. I have had people involved, and I'm always on the lookout for other members or other influencers, but I guess it's just the latest in a long litany of musical projects.
So it seems that moving from Auckland to Tauranga is a common thing, actually.
Yeah, we've had a run of that.
Yeah.
You would be surprised. I bump into so many people who have relocated down here for the greener pastures, perhaps, although it's more unaffordable down here now.
I was going to say it used to be for cheaper house prices, but it wouldn't be these days.
No. Not at all. It was when we left, but I think maybe those house prices are skewed by properties in Mount Maunganui, perhaps.
So are you more a solo artist, or do you have a band?
With this project, it's definitely solo. As I say, I have had other members play live with me, and I find it easier just to make things happen in my own environment and then see where I can take it in the future. I mean, I'm open to other band members, but yeah, this project is solo.
And you mentioned you're an artist as well, and I'm looking at the cool shirt you're wearing, and there happens to be another one in the background on the Zoom call, so I'm guessing that is part of your other world?
Yes. What you see is, I have it right here, so I'm prepared slightly. I have the LP that came out in February, great. Emotional Molecules, and this cover itself is screen printed where I work, and why not pump off a few shirts as well at the same time and promote?
Fantastic.
So what is the day job if you work somewhere that you can do that?
I work at Toi Ohomai Institute of Technology in the visual arts and I teach visual arts and design. We have a Bachelor of Creative Industries here in Tauranga. So I'm full-time academic staff member on that course and degree program here. Great job. Love it.
And do you think that visual arts comes through and influences your music videos?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think it influences everything, not just the music videos, but also the content, you know, what my music's about. And, you know, I'm an artist. I make installation works. And sometimes my work will make the viewer uncomfortable. And I don't really have a problem with that entering into my music space. You know, it's just a part of it. I find it difficult to draw a line between the two. I'm happy for them to merge here and there.
And tell us a little bit about your journey. How did you get into being an artist / music maker?
I guess artist is fairly simple. It's just what I was good at school. And I think my fifth form art teacher was the one who sort of said, oh, you need to go to art school, you know. And I was like, oh, could I? What is that? And so I ended up going to art school. And whilst I was there, good friends of mine said to me, hey, we've got this band and we need a bass player. Do you want to be the bass player? And I was like, well, I don't know how to play bass. And they're like, well, you know, we can teach you. So I was, yeah, okay, I'll do it. And it just snowballed from there, really. I just got involved because I was surrounded by musicians. I mean, I would say I'm a late bloomer to the music scene or being a musician. You know, I didn't pick up an instrument till I was about 18, but, you know, here we are.
And who inspires you musically? Who do you listen to?
Oh, golly, what a question. I just bought a This Will Destroy You LP. So that's some post-rock. I love bands like Mogwai. But I've been listening to Goldman, an ambient piano artist on Spotify a lot. So I enjoy all kinds of stuff, really. Obviously, I'm really interested in new music, particularly domestically. I'm always listening to whatever's new, whatever's coming out, just because I'm involved in the same sphere, I suppose.
And talk us through your latest track, which we'll play shortly, Bulletproof.
Bulletproof.
What's this one all about? It's a very interesting video.
Well, there's kind of two angles, I suppose, you can approach. The video taps into it a little bit, but a lot of my songs, I guess if I get into the conceptual side of it, is about ontology or metaphysics. And maybe right now is a great time to talk about it because so many people are investing in certain information online and then getting really uptight about what they think's going on. You know, so I guess in my idea of that video or the song itself is underneath every now and then what you think is going on or what you think or what you believe gets broken, right? It gets shattered somehow. And, you know, for me as a creative, it's always been a really healthy thing to do, to sort of destroy what I believe in a sense and rebuild it again so I can see things afresh. And so that song and the video is sort of mirroring that idea. And you know, obviously I maybe poked fun at certain evangelical groups who use that process to go door knocking. The idea that, you know, you go door knocking, you open the door and you enter some new world, you know, and perhaps there's an influence. And it's every time you open a new door, you'll find something new. There's a maybe a commentary on wokeness in the lyric. You know, when your bulletproof glass is woken, it doesn't say broken, it's woken. And just that commentary that, you know, a lot of our paradigms are being challenged now and probably rightly so. And like it says in the song, you'll need smooth hands to flow when your bulletproof glass is woken.
Brilliant. Well, before we listen to it, tell us what's next? What's on the plans for Kyle
Musically?
We Will Ride Fast? Yeah.
The plan, after I put the LP out in February, you know, when you go through making an LP, there's sort of like a lag time between sending off the masters. And I had some songs, about five songs I wanted to work on. I thought to myself, well, if I just jump out right now, I'll throw two of them out this year with videos. So I've got another one already ready to go, teed up. Another one's called The Grinding. So that'll come out next month with video as well. And all of this hopefully leads into my EP next year. I've got this idea of doing a traditional gatefold cover EP, maybe like six songs.
Cool.
I've even got the names. It's going to be the Army of Invisible Zombies EP. So that's coming out sometime next year once I get around to it. The two songs, Bulletproof and The Grinding, won't be on it. So I have enough material to fill at least six or so songs on the EP. We'll see how we go. Hopefully it's going to be a gatefold record, 12-inch. That's the plan. That's the ambition.
Sounds like a good plan to me. Well, yeah. Carl, thanks for chatting to us tonight. Let's play now Bulletproof from We Will Ride Fast.
Joyce.
And that was Bulletproof. And what we found out after the interview was it's actually Kyle's birthday today when this goes to air. So happy birthday, Kyle, and thanks for chatting to us in Tauranga. We're now delighted to join Soz and Shah from Soz and Shah Creative, who are here to chat to us about their award-winning theatre show, Waiting. Welcome to the show, team.
Thanks for having us.
Very appropriate. I actually kept them waiting in the Zoom waiting room on purpose just because of the title. Tell us, what is this show all about?
You can take that.
So the basic premise of it all is a letter to my son. It's my poetry. I take you through seasons, and I just share kind of my life story right up until this point right now. Not so much COVID time, but mainly till about 2019. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, and are these real pieces of poetry that you've shared with your son over a period of time, or have you written it collectively just for the show?
Well, it was written, so Shardon decided it was a really great idea to enter the Nelson Fringe whilst we were down caring for my mum, who was terminally ill, just we had enough on our plate. And so he kind of collated these poems whilst we were living down there, and hence the title Waiting, because we were really in this space of waiting and in the unknown. And then he said, oh, can you direct it? So I was like, really?
He said no.
I said no to that.
Well, you're going
to
say, how much? What's my pay?
we love a challenge. But then it was actually my mum who was like, no, for God's sake, you've got to do it. And so the poems were collated into figuring out what they were on their own and then how they'll be a piece. And we realised that the kind of through line was a letter to Arlo, our son, and that was a way we could kind of piece it together. Yeah.
And you're gone on Boosted and to create the money needed to make it happen?
Yeah, so the Boosted campaign, we've made it with nothing. We made it at the beginning in our lounge. And now after winning 3 Fringe festivals, we are going on to develop it to festival level. And we had our first festival lined up, the Taranaki Arts Festival, which unfortunately is not happening this year, and which none of the festivals are really happening this year. So we are raising funds to develop it with some amazing collaborators. You want to talk about them?
Yeah, so we got, it was mainly for like development, but also like to pay our collaborators a living wage, especially going on tour. Not saying that it doesn't happen, but like we really wanted that for our little company starting up, and we wanted to pay our collaborators what they were worth. And that was the whole premise of the Boosted like thing being on tour. We got some amazing collaborators coming on board for that development when it can happen.
Brandon Hadu, who's he's going to score us our very own musical score. He's currently working with like Timbaland
over in the States. You'll find him on Twitch at the moment, just smashing it out.
So we're very blessed to have him. Renee Lyons is going to dramaturg for us, having had 3 successful solo shows herself. We have Sarah Foster, who's coming on with The Movement, and then an amazing Pete, who's going to come on with our lighting, and we're going to just be a lot more professional than Shah and I taking it on the road and me doing everything.
It's basically Sauce just grabbing a whole army of people so she doesn't have to deal with me the whole time.
Because I was going to say, what would be the obvious differences if someone had seen it in your other iterations to what you're hoping it will look like in this new iteration?
Not too different. We've had a really strong sense from our audiences. They don't want it to change too much. So it's at the moment, it's sitting at about 40 to 45 minutes. So we just want to grow it a little more to 60 minutes. And just really having the time and space to really make sure the through line and everything is right, because we're dealing with poetry. We just want to make it more accessible, especially for our target audience, which is, I mean, the show really deals with male vulnerability. And so we just want to make sure it's really clear, and we're wanting people to come who maybe haven't been to theatre. And so just, making sure we've done everything in our power to make it that they can understand and feel their own story through it.
Mainly the soundscape, because, Brandon will just be giving us the whole score for it.
Yeah, that's the most exciting bit of the development, to work with him and see what, where he comes from and how that will aid us and,
yeah.
Is it easy or difficult to bring in other people into something that's so personal and you've already taken on a journey? Are there times that you have to just hold your breath and go, listen to them, it's so much, it's yours?
We haven't gotten the room yet, have we?
We haven't, but I'm really excited because it's just been Sauce and I, and
it's been a few maritals along the way. I'm really happy that there'll be other people in the room too.
And how old's Arlo?
He's just turned six.
So does he know there's a show that's all poetry that was dedicated to him?
Yeah, he's seen the show. He's come on tour with us with it. And yeah, it's so part of his world with us doing what we do. He's just like, oh, mum and dad are doing their creative thing. But I think what that's so special to know, whatever happens with this piece and regardless of the awards or what anyone else thinks, how special that he will have this for the rest of his life, to know that his dad made that for him. Well, and his mum, but that's such a special thing aside from it giving us work continuing to give us work.
So let's talk a little bit about your individual art journeys, because obviously, you know, you've both done quite a bit here in New Zealand. So who wants to go first?
For our radio listeners, they're pointing at each other.
You choose. We're terrible.
You take it away.
Yourself. Oh, okay. I will. Here you go. So what do you want to know?
your arts journey. So your background.
So I grew up on a farm in Nelson and had a lot of space to make a lot of noise, but also a lot of space and time to make up worlds and stories on my own. So apparently my family tells me they saw me wanting to be an actor from a very young age. And I did, and I followed that and headed off to Toi Whakaari in Wellington, where I was lucky enough to meet Shardon as well. We were in the same class at drama school. And then I was very fortunate to gain a role on Shorten Street about 6 months after I graduated, which was quite interesting because I'd left drama school wanting to direct and get more behind the scenes. And then this opportunity came up, which I took, and I ended up on there for 6 years, which was an amazing, amazing learning experience. It was an amazing experience, full stop, spending your 20s on the telly. During that time, I also kept directing theatre, which is my love, my passion. And then, yeah, my mum got sick towards the end of my time at Shorties, and I made the decision to leave. I was already quite ready to leave anyway, so it wasn't too hard, and we headed off back to Nelson when we had a bit of a break, but then couldn't keep our hands off doing things, so got involved in the Nelson theatre scene down there. And since then, yeah, just done a couple of cool American things, films, and toured with Rants in the Dark, Emily Wright's show around the country, which was just amazing to be back on stage with a show of that scale where we have microphones and perform with 500 mums, and yeah, it was amazing. And yeah, that's kind of me. And at the moment I'm currently writing a book, a cookbook about grief, so I'm trialing out my way in writing, and Beatnik Publishing have come on board to see that through with me, so that's really exciting and nerve-wracking, and I feel very out of my comfort zone.
But cool. As artistic people, we love pushing our boundaries, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Your turn.
Yeah, we love pushing our boundaries, and then we kind of figure it out in the hole. I grew up in Wellington. I went to a Catholic school. I grew up with a matriarchal family and lots of women around me. I always knew my place and lots of cup of tea. I was doing a lot of extracurricular stuff like choir and, you know, leadership stuff, like with prefect, all of that. And after I had done a year's trade, electrician trade, I was like, it wasn't really fitting. So I just kind of, all my boys kind of went to this drama school, NZ College of Performing Arts in Porirua and with Whitirea. So I sat there for 2 years, and there I met Jess Smith, who said, you need to come to Toi with me and we're going to audition together. And we got into Toi and met her. Didn't really like her in the beginning, but and then...
Is it about your craft?
And then moved to Auckland, and I had a really good time at Toi. Like, I really found myself. There was a whole lot of, I got pushed into a lot of leadership roles and got a lot of lead roles as well, and then came into the industry and really found a difficult place. It was like a quite a big hole. There was not much Polynesian or diverse work going on at that point in time that I knew of, or they were just side parts. They weren't really roles that look like Macbeth or like Asdak from Caucasian Chalk Circle. So I was just like, whoop. But in that time, I learned how to teach and like get involved with like Glenn Innes with GI and help out there, and like, got involved with Massive Red Light Theatre Company as well, which I've got a really long-term relationship. They've been helping me out for a long time, eh? And then got into like The Arrival with Red Light, did Paper Sky. Done a whole lot. Recently just finished Dakota. Well, started the season in Dakota of the White Flats. And
that was fantastic. I was lucky enough to be there at the opening. That was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, it was a cool show to be a part of.
You were so wild and free. It was so nice. You've had a year, though, of such different roles this year.
This year was Ladies' Night. Well, no, I started off with waiting at the Auckland Fringe, and then I went into Ladies' Night down at the Court, and then did Upu, one of my favourite shows with the Upu Collective. That's a big poetry show that went down to the Kia Mo Festival in Wellington. And then, yeah, hit it off with Dakota and thought I was on a run, and then COVID became my friend again.
So, good run. That was a steady run.
It was a bloody good run.
So how much do you, has like your work with Red Leap and that physical side influenced how waiting's kind of come together?
Yeah, I think that Red Leap, I mentioned Red Leap quite a lot in my the reviews or like the interviews that I have about waiting. They really, they really influenced me on imagery. Not so much on the physical side, it's just all the imagery stuff, like the use of props and like the unique ways that they put stuff together. I try to. Yeah, we got that all based on, we use a lot of season elemental work and waiting. So, there's some magic in it.
It was interesting because you said about when you came out of drama school, there wasn't a lot of Māori Pacifica brown faces, etc. Do you feel that's changed now?
Or is
changing?
Absolutely. I think there's more resource for. I think there's more resource for it. There's more. I mean, the big time players. I think Moana from the Disney like really shifted the game on that level. I think The Rock's done amazing with Young Rock. That allowed all the international stuff. I think has like put pressure on New Zealand to like really showcase the amazing diverse Polynesian Māori flavour, you know. So I think it's I think also like it's been about time. I mean, like from the Naked Stars and, you know, Pacific Underground, from all of those, from Nathaniel Lees, so a whole lot of like, you know, ancestry like work that has been done on the ground. I think it's about time. I think.
And it was we actually interviewed Theo David last week, who of course is currently on Shortland Street. And, you know, he was saying how he wouldn't be on Shortland Street now if it wasn't for all the people that have gone before him on Shorters.
Absolutely.
Well, even not even the faces, but getting them into the writing rooms and just the voice changing, which is even more important, you know, it needs to start from there.
Definitely.
So if people are listening to us tonight and want to support your project, how can they get in touch and where can they find your Boosted campaign?
Well, you can find it on the Boosted X Moana page, or if you have Instagram or Facebook, the Sauce and Shell Creative pages, at Sauce and Shell Creative. I think we are for both on Facebook and Insta, and there's a link in the bio. We're just so grateful. We've been absolutely blown away by the amount of support already that we've had. I think it's like the little $5 and $10 donations I get really moved by because we completely understand that we were always planning to do this booster campaign at this time, not knowing we'd be in like, you know, a smack bang in the middle of a pandemic when we know how hard it is to give to these things at the moment, and especially in the arts, it's a tragic time. So, yeah, I think those little ones, just knowing that it's about the support rather than the money has been amazing.
People are behind you. Yeah, absolutely.
So before they go, should we ask them both one of our... Yeah, so we've got some standard Kick Arts questions, and I think we should ask them one each, but different ones, so that they don't have time to think about it. Here you go. So let's start with you, Shah. You are standing about to receive your Oscar for whatever it is, and we want to know who you will thank before the music plays.
My wife, my kid, and my nana. Yeah, that's it.
And then you'll do something. I was like, yay, baby.
Short and sweet, but powerful. That's all we needed. Now your question twists a little bit. If you could go back and talk to your 16-year-old self, sit your 16-year-old self down for a life lesson, what would it be?
Don't worry about what anyone else thinks about you, and don't let people, like, I think for her it's like keep being loud, keep being proud, and don't diminish your light.
beautiful. You both have an enormous energy coming through a Zoom screen, so I can only imagine how good Waiting will be. We'll look forward to enjoying it in its next alliteration. We will pop your boosted links up on our Facebook and social media pages so people can support who are listening, and all the best with your project.
Thank you so much.
We're going to play now Aucklander Zane Nathan. He's released another song. This one is called Smile.
Sitting half asleep on the train, tired and with feelings laying, just want to go home to sleep, lay in my bed kind of cheap. Got off the station, the train's moving, saw someone, got me thinking, you're so stunned.
Now we are joined by Rich, from singer-songwriter from Street Georges. How are you, Rich?
Hey, doing really well yourselves.
Same old COVID, same old day. Tell us, Rich, what is Street Georges?
Yeah, so I guess the name Street Georges is a little bit of a middle finger to the crown, or whichever King George you want to imagine, but... It's kind of like the street people or something like that. It's a bit of a riff on that kind of a name. And I guess it just stuck. A few years ago, I was trying to come up with a name for a band, and that's what came out. So just go with it.
And what kind of a style of music do people hear?
Yeah, so, I mean, I've always promoted myself as a reggae artist, but that's kind of back before I was a front man and a singer. So I love playing reggae on drums, and that's been my history as drums, and so I always imagined that's the kind of music that I would produce, but so far none of them have been really reggae. After two single releases starting out, probably late 2018 is when I really took on the frontman role and writing, and that ended up with a first single release in 2019, which was more of a soul reggae, I guess. I sort of position Street Georges in a soul reggae sort of a genre of mix of both. And yeah, that's definitely down the soul end of it. And then I think this the second single came out this year, So it's all about lockdown, and that just had a certain feel about it, from the feeling of being in lockdown and so forth from 2020. And it's kind of it's slightly grungy and slightly jazzy and slightly soul.
I'd agree with that. That's a really good way to describe it.
And the thing is with reggae, of course, a lot of reggae is actually about the content, isn't it? And it is that kind of stick it to the man almost kind of feel often with reggae kind of lyrics and things, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And it's, you know, about freedom and all of those sorts of things is the thing that comes through when you listen to people making their own decisions and having the freedom to choose, and all of those things come into that. So being locked down is kind of, you know, it's our little taste of what jail's like for some, I guess.
So. And what happened in 2018 that took you out of the safety of being behind the drums and out to the front?
Yeah, I guess over a long time of playing drums, I've never found an opportunity to bring music to the foreground that I've imagined that I would write. It's a little bit hard to drive a band from the drums, I've found. And after a few years of trying to find that way of doing that, I had a conversation with a guy, I won't name names, but he's a singer from a fairly well-known New Zealand band, and he said to me something about, he didn't think he was a good singer either, but he had to do it because that was the only way he could get his music out, was to have someone to sing it, and there was no one else to do it, so he did it. And I sort of took that on board. That's probably 2017 that conversation happened, and I sort of mulled that over. Early 2018, I was traveling in a place called Myanmar, and I had this huge experience of being in a country where English wasn't the first language. And that really brought some things home about Te Reo for me in New Zealand, which we're so privileged to have. And I guess trying to squeeze a whole lot of those things into how do I get this feeling out of me and out to people to hear it, and playing the drums just wasn't cutting it. So I ended up just picking up. I've always had a guitar around the house knocking around for the kids to play with. And I picked it up, had a bit of a tutu on it, put it down again because it sounded just as bad as it always had. And my son showed me a thing called a capo or a capo, depending on how you say it. And my three chords instantly turned into about 33 chords on a guitar. It blew my brain because I had this opportunity to make these different sounds on a guitar. So I took that step and just went busking in New Lynn, not far from where I lived in Avondale. And people were paying me money to play tunes. I wasn't even singing. I was just jamming on the guitar. And I took that to the next level with open mics. And then after about 3 months of sitting in the back row, freaking out, decided to play some songs at an open mic, and that sort of gave me the confidence to start singing, and other things came from there. So it's sort of been a strange journey, because whenever I go on a stage, I naturally want to sit on the drums, and going out the front's a totally different cope-upper, so still not something I naturally do, but I just do it because you have to, and that's sort of where that came from, I guess. So it's a fairly new journey for me. And I've got my first electric guitar since then, and managed to work with musicians that I've known, some of them a long time, some not so long, and come up with this sort of interesting sound. And yeah, and then COVID's come in and sort of taken that whole thing down a level with trying to promote a band and playing live gigs has been an interesting journey. And but yeah. That's the way it is at the moment, and we'll get there.
So do you think that your music is like, is your preference playing live, or are you more about recording?
Yeah, no, I love the live thing. I hate it, love it, if that makes sense. It scares the crap out of me to stand up in front of people and do something, but the feeling that you get in a room when things are going right, yeah, there might only be four or five people really getting the music, and some of the places you play, there's people talking louder than the music. But yeah, I've done a couple of single launches now, and those those are quite respectful environments where people have come to actually hear the band, and they're quite polite and listening, and yeah, just had some really good experiences with that side of things. And I, you know, with a lifetime of playing drums, I've already had those experiences just sitting on the drums, so I know that feeling, and it's definitely a different feeling when you're playing your own music and people are getting what you're saying, and it's sort of, yeah, it's a very special feeling. So I do prefer that. I don't mind the recording environment. It's one of those sort of necessary evils, I guess, because if you don't do it, no one can ever hear what you do. But there's a tendency to mull over things far too long with the way recording's done nowadays. You can take things away and play with them for months and months if you want to, just tweaking this, that, and the other. So I kind of like the faster process of being able to get into the studio, get everything done, and then try and get it done as quickly as possible, as if you were doing it in the studio. I try and take on that approach. The last song, Next Lockdown, was a live take in a studio in Auckland, but in between lockdowns. It was about November 2020, and there was just a few months in between lockdowns where we could get out and do things, and that was just a magical day in a studio, Earwig Studio in Birkenhead. And Shane, who runs the place up there, just provides a really good environment for musicians, and you can have everything set up and you play the whole thing. You can do one thing at a time if you want to do that approach, but we just managed to get this beautiful one take sort of start to finish and done. So it sort of really captured the essence of the live environment, I thought. So that was a real magical thing to capture that. So really proud of that.
You wrote this back in November last year, but called it Next Lockdown. Did you think November this year you might still be sitting in one?
No, it was kind of a prayer against a future lockdown, having been through it. So I don't know, the context of the song, I called it Next Lockdown, and I put in brackets COVID love song, because I thought the word lockdown's bad enough on its own. Don't want to scare people away too much, so I just tried to categorize it as a COVID love song. It's not like an anti-government conspiracy song. It's about relationships and lockdowns, and you know, that feeling of it was based on an observation of some of the people I know that have been through lockdown on their own, and how disheartening that was. And I just, that whole feeling came through it. It's completely opposite to my own lockdown experience, because I had about 7 people in the house. So I had too many people. but my heart was just aching for those that had no one else, and they were stuck in their house and couldn't do anything. And yeah, Zoom can only do so much for you.
Absolutely. So Rich, how can people track your music down and find out more about Street Georges?
Yeah, there's all the obvious channels with your Spotify's and Instagram and Facebook, or they could Google Street Georges and there'll be something pop up, hopefully. But definitely, the usual places for your music, whether it's your iPhone or the Google Play Store and all of those things, I think, have it as well. So
brilliant. Awesome chatting to you tonight. We're going to play out now with Next Lockdown, COVID Love Story. Thanks so much for talking, and hopefully you're not having to write the reprise of this again next year.
Yeah, that'll be next lockdown.
Yeah. Still going in lockdown, yeah. Thanks, Rich. All the best with your music.
Hey, great to talk to you guys. Thank you.
So, Emma, shall we check out what's come in our inbox over the last week?
For sure. So the conversation is already beginning. Auckland Pride to mandate vaccinations for all of 2022's Auckland Pride events to protect the community from COVID-19.
Wow, that's starting nice and early, getting that message out.
It sure is. So Auckland Pride's COVID-19 response has always been about keeping our community safe and protecting the festival from disruptions, both caused by the high alert level changes and the high rates of vaccination achieves both. So, yep, first probably one to actually make a big statement.
Absolutely. Now, Music Therapy Week 2021 is going ahead November 15th to the 21st, advocating for vital therapeutic services and the highly skilled professionals providing them. Music Therapy New Zealand is proud to confirm their annual awareness campaign will go ahead, but in a hybrid model, an opportunity to celebrate and showcase the innovative successes of this unique practice in communities right across Aotearoa. So as a practice, music therapy is the planned use of music to assist the health and personal growth of people with identified needs. Now, there's a big program, so go and Google Music Therapy New Zealand and you will find out all the details of what's coming up from the week 15th to the 21st of November.
And Auckland Live have emailed us to let us know that the Auckland Diwali Festival, which is usually such a big thing at this time, is still going ahead. It's already started last weekend and it runs through to the 4th of November online. So check out Diwali online via Auckland Live to see the workshops and things happening there.
Now, with a little Kiwi ingenuity, Wellington's Opera House has made a swift pivot for the Royal New Zealand Ballet's Rhyme and Healthcare season of A Midsummer Night's Dream, opening the 28th of October. Changes to the auditorium, which will remain in place for all subsequent events until the end of the year, allow the ballet to perform to socially distanced audiences within the government's event and hospitality restrictions. It includes the removal of entire rows of seats, strictly limited numbers, and seating in household groups, with distance between audience members, mask wearing, and a reduced interval time, sadly with no bar service, but opening up all of its entrances and exits to keep it nice and safe. So they delighted that will be running, but it is important to note that sadly, performances in Napier, Palmerston North, Christchurch, Invercargill, Dunedin, Auckland and Takapuna have been cancelled. So ticket holders for the Wellington season will be contacted directly by the ticketing team to rebook their tickets for this new look or take a refund. Performances outside of Wellington will be contacted, will be contacted to arrange a refund.
And Art Week Auckland is all a go with a full program released last week. So the full 2021 Art Week Auckland program is live, brimming with hundreds of exhibitions to explore throughout Tamaki Makaurau to enliven the senses and showcase our city's unique creative spirit. So running from the 5th to the 14th of November, there is truly something this year for everybody with as they embrace the kaupapa of art for all. Obviously, during Art Week, galleries and studio spaces will be able to open as restrictions allow, giving Aucklanders the much-needed opportunity to engage with art safely. If Auckland remains under strict restrictions during the festival, a digital offering will complement self-guided tours and public artworks across the region. So 12 precincts in the 2021 program. It's a plethora of art delight in the middle of town. So keep an eye out for that and check out more at artweek.co.nz.
Now, you may have heard this already in the media over the past week, but sadly, the Auckland leg of the New Zealand International Film Festival has been cancelled. New Zealand Film Festival Trust Chair Catherine Fitzgerald said the board and management have worked tirelessly to assess all possible options, but it is with heavy hearts that they made the announcement to cancel. However, they are working towards presenting the festival in the rest of the country within the current level 2 restrictions and working with venues to ensure safety is paramount. So do check them out. It will head to Christchurch on Friday the 29th of October, Wellington from the 4th of November and Dunedin from the 5th before heading out to 9 regional centres. Full details are available at nziff.co.nz.
Now on the 4th of October, I know it was a couple of weeks ago, we were of course informed of the passing of one of New Zealand's favourite children's authors, that was Joy Watson. Now, do you remember Granddad Slippers, Stephen?
Yeah, that's really sad to hear this news.
So nearly 500,000 books were printed across Grandpa's books series from Joy Watson. So very sad to hear that. And I'm sure that her passing has resonated with many people throughout New Zealand.
Absolutely. And finally, Tautai Contemporary Pacific Arts Trust are presenting Oh My Ocean, bringing together work developed by 9 artists throughout the 2020 and 2021 COVID-19 lockdowns. The exhibition, curated by Nigel Borrell, is open from Saturday the 30th of October or when COVID-19 alert levels allow after this date. It's a light-hearted riff on the popular social media phrase, "Oh my God," exclaimed in surprise, shock, or amazement. The phrase is a play on words, meaning, and digital expression, but underneath the gist is a statement about the integral connection between Moana people and the ocean as the centre of one's world and one's identity. So it will open up when the alert level allows us at the Tautai Gallery, level 1 on 300 K Road from 10 till 4 daily. If you have something you'd like to share with us, email us at info@kickarts.org.nz. Come on the show and chat about it, or send us a bulletin for us to read out.
I think you're perfect.
Four seasons in one day, lying in the depths of your imagination, worlds above and worlds below. The sun shines on the black clouds hanging over the domain. Even when you're feeling warm, the temperature could drop away. Like four seasons in one day, smiling as the ship comes down. You can tell a man what he has to say, everything gets turned around, and I will risk my neck again, again. You can take me where you will, up the creek and through the mill, like all the things you can't explain. Seasons in one day.
Blood dries up and rain.
And that was, of course, Crowded House's Four Seasons in One Day. And it was their live recording from the Sydney Opera House in 2016. I know I feel a little bit like it's Four Seasons in One Day at the moment, being in lockdown, especially around that 1 o'clock or 4 o'clock briefing time.
And it's time now to catch up with Sharon, our wonderful book reviewer. And Sharon, this week you've reviewed the book Crime Time. Tell us about it.
Well, the media release, I think, summed it up, really. It's about an undercover cop to international investigator. This got me. I loved it from the very beginning. So the media release and the attachment said the context and era explained. This is not a politically corrected book. It's authentic rendition of the times, the people, and New Zealand society, particularly in the 1970s. Well, that was me. 1970s, I thought that was just great. Politically incorrect, oh my God, it was all the way through it.
Hence it's for you, yeah.
Hence it was just my book. So Mark's the same age as me, Dad's from Holland, came here alone. Yeah, I could relate to him straight away. So Dad's sort of, you know, son, the emphasis on your name and what you need to do. And protect that just was really, really interesting. So it starts off as a story of Emu, which was Mark's undercover name. He lived for a year with the hardest criminals and even witnessed a murder. It was brilliant. What a strong and resilient young man. I mean, to go from days, you know, spending drunken days with drugs and you know, bad criminals, keeping your wits about you, making sure that nobody recognised you or called you a narc or whatever. And in those days, of course, there was none. Nobody said, oh, I think we need to now sit down and let's have a look at, you know, are you addicted to anything? Is there anything that we need to, you know, psychological help or anything? There was nothing. It's just the way you get on with it after it. Pretty amazing, really.
Brilliant. That's an easy book review for you this week, Sharon. Sold.
Well, it was, absolutely. I mean, he's a clever man. He goes on to become a lawyer, barrister, and he now manages as a managing director of an international private investigation and security company. The people that he works with, he's got his daughter and his son working for him and his wife, who was a policewoman, and yeah, and really intriguing. He specialises in international fraud. Having been involved in a fraud case in the late 80s and dealing with the Serious Fraud Office and going through all of that, that just was unbelievable, the way he catches people and what he does. And you know, I could relate to some of it. It was just intriguing.
Awesome. Rating well out of 10?
Written. Oh, look, out of 10, I'd give it 9.5 out of 10.
Gee, that's one of the highest we've had, Emma.
Yeah, definitely.
He just moves from one drama to the next drama. Like, he just, the way he writes, it just flows. It's intriguing. It's different stories and people that he's chased around the world for fraud. And yeah, great. Loved it.
Brilliant.
Definitely a lockdown book.
Fantastic. All right, well, Crime Time is available where all good books are sold. We'll be catching up with Sharon a lot over the next few weeks because finally the alert level changed, obviously enough for courier drivers to deliver all the books that had been mounted up. So Sharon has a ton to read over the next few weeks.
Yeah, I'm not going to do any work over the next few weeks. It's all about reading books and doing book reviews.
Brilliant. Well, next week we'll catch up with you and find out what you thought of The Seeker's Garden. That's next week's book. Thanks, Sharon.
Thanks.
Said you wanna talk. Guess I never know what you're thinking. Lead me out the room. Tell me you don't know what you're feeling. You know you can't just cut me off and just run out. I tried to pick you up, but you let me down.
position. If I don't see you, baby, I don't need to check for messages from you. If I don't see you and my baby's from me, to stop thinking endlessly. If only that it were for me. To forget it, but I know I can't play pretend now. Don't know where we're headed, oh no. Yeah, maybe it's all in my head now. I thought that you could let me in, but I look, ran out. I tried to fix it up, but it's breaking down. I know that it's good for me, but
was our friend Chris Bates with his latest single, Best For Me.
And we're delighted now to be joined with Isa Pearl Ritchie, author of The Seeker's Garden and Food Freedom Community. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Where are you beaming in from tonight?
From a little bit out of Wellington. I live on Plimerton, which is just on the Kapiti coast.
Nice. And you're a very established author, but tonight here to chat about these two books. So let's start with The Seeker's Garden, which has a wonderful line in your media release that says, if you stand still for long enough, the past catches up with you. Well, that's enough to hook me in. So what's it all about?
Oh, that's a good question. There's quite a few things going on, a few different characters, and they each have their own stories, and then they're also connected. I think that line comes from the character called Marcia, who was the first character who kind of came to me when I was doing a lot of gardening in an old family garden that had been in the family for a couple of generations. And I kept digging up bits and pieces and thinking, oh, what's this old bit of metal or old bottle, that kind of thing. And there was just sort of this analogy for like kind of family baggage that is sort of sitting there over generations. And I was thinking about what a character who maybe been overseas for a few decades, coming back to New Zealand and facing a whole lot of stuff in their past that they'd been avoiding for a long time, and doing this gardening in an old family garden of the house that she'd previously grown up in, and trying to confront those things that she'd been avoiding for years.
Nice. And garden seems to be the theme here, because your other book that you've got out at the moment is Food Freedom Community. Quite a different storyline, I'm suspecting.
Yes, because the other one's a non-fiction. Yeah. Food Freedom Community is based on my PhD research, which was about food sovereignty and local food systems, local growers and providers and so on. So yeah, it's definitely some gardening themes, and I'm very interested in food, so I think that comes through, and probably even in the books that are not supposed to have anything to do with food.
So when you're writing, do you have a preference over the fiction or the non-fiction?
Well, I've mostly written fiction. I used to write a lot of sort of media articles for like the student magazine and stuff when I was at early on in my uni days, and I've written a few other of those sorts of things. But I think the fiction is a nice kind of, there's so much freedom in it, because you can invent whole storylines, you can invent all sorts of different worlds, and certainly very different from academic research, which has to be quite rigorous. So I think I prefer mostly I prefer writing fiction because you can kind of get into such a flow with it that it just, you know, kind of takes you on all sorts of interesting journeys. But nonfiction is quite interesting too. It's just such a different thing to write.
And do you have a specific process when you're doing your fiction, like to get you into that flow? What's your process?
Oh, that's a really good question. Well, it used to be that I just kind of wait until I really had to write something because I wasn't really sure how to get there. But I think at the moment I do have a really good kind of routine, which has taken me such a long time because I'm a bit of a scattered person. It's taken me a really long time to get into, you know, I have a good morning routine, and I don't always write, but I do always get up and do a few things that help me get into a good headspace. Sometimes I'll do a bit of editing after that, and sometimes I'll do a bit of writing, and sometimes I won't, because sometimes there are these sort of rest periods that I need, which is a bit like when you let a field go fallow, to use a gardening analogy, and you just let things regenerate and compost down a bit. So if you want to know my morning routine, I get up, and now that we're really fortunate enough to have a spa pool, I jump in the spa pool because that's the best thing to do when it's still dark, you know, 6 a.m. And then I just do a little bit of sort of stretching to kind of warm my brain up. And then I'll sit down and sometimes I edit, sometimes I write, sometimes I don't do anything because I just need to do nothing. But it's just about getting into a good mental space.
What a great way to start the day. Spa every morning. I'm jealous.
Really good, yeah.
Looking at some of your past books, the one that caught my eye was Fishing for Maui, a novel about food, whānau and mental illness. This seems a little different to some of your other books that you've written.
Yeah. Well, it's still got food themes. So yeah, that's another one with multiple characters. They're all kind of in the same family and they're all kind of related, but it does have mental health themes. I think a lot of my work does, because I'm very interested in mental health and kind of the way we get into good mental states, because I've struggled with that myself. And so I've always found it such an interesting thing to learn about. And then because I'm interested in learning about it, I want to write fiction about it. Yeah.
And tell us about your journey as a writer that's led you up to this point. Where did it all start?
Oh, that's a really good question. Because writing was really hard for me. I'm not a neurotypical person, but it took me a really long time to figure that out. and I didn't do very well at school, and especially because I had a swift transition from being in Kura Kaupapa and Kohanga Reo until I was about 8, which is, Māori is really intuitive to learn to read and write, because if you know the sounds, you can write anything and you can read anything. You might not know what the words mean, but you know how to say them. And then I went into a normal school, you know, they call them normal schools sometimes, and I couldn't read or write at all in English, and it was terrifying. Because English has silent letters, and I remember I would sometimes just put in random letters just in case there were silent letters, because I just didn't know how the rules worked. And for a while I was pretty much illiterate, which was very disempowering. Wow. Because the schooling environment that I was in was all in English, and I couldn't read and write in English. So it definitely didn't come very quickly to me, although I did write things in Māori. I remember writing a song in Māori when I was really young. But yeah, I really enjoyed writing when I did learn how to read and write, sort of fantastical stories and that sort of thing in school. And then when I was a teenager, I wrote a lot of very melodramatic teenage poetry and, you know, wrote in journals and things like that. And then, like I said before, when I was at uni, I'd write random pieces in the student magazine. And yeah, and I think my journey into fiction kind of came from having struggled with depression from when I was about 12, and learning so much about that. I really wanted to write about that, but when I started writing about it, it sounded really cheesy, I felt too uncomfortable. And so I started writing characters who could write about that kind of thing, which gave me a little bit of distance.
And I think that is the case quite often. We do kind of distance frame to take away the angst and, like you said, the cheesiness of it.
Yeah, totally. And there's a huge vulnerability if you're writing really about yourself and what's going on, and writing fiction can be a little bit of a safe way of doing that.
Absolutely. So what's next? What are you writing when you get out of the spa pool tomorrow?
Well, I'm working on a project. It's another non-fiction project, actually. So it coming from this idea of we live in this world that's constantly telling us that we're not enough and we need more this and more that, and we need all the stuff in the commercials. And so it's about that kind of how do you get to be enough, to feel like you're enough, that you're doing enough, that you have enough. So that's the sort of central concept of it, which I'm finding quite interesting. And I'm talking to people, interviewing people from psychologists to artists to activists, actually, to try and get different perspectives, because nobody necessarily wants to listen to me waffling on about it for the whole time. Everyone likes to have different perspectives in there. So, yeah, it's quite an interesting project.
Brilliant. We have a very traditional Kick Arts question, but it'd be interesting to get your take on it tonight, because we've had different guests comment. If you were to go back in time and talk to your young self, your 16-year-old self, perhaps coming to the end of your high school journey, what advice would you give yourself back then?
Oh, I'd really want to let myself know that it didn't matter that I was terrible at high school. I didn't even finish high school. It was so hard. It was so hard for me to concentrate unless I was really, really engaged. And I felt so terrible about it. So I'd really want to let myself know, this is not the end of your life. This is not, things actually get much better from here. It's not like you've ruined everything by failing school C or failing sixth form or, you know, that kind of thing.
And you know what? That's so important at the moment, because we've got so many students, especially up here in Tamaki Makaurau, that are really struggling with what happens if we can't sit our exams, what happens if we can't go back to school. And you know, they need to understand that it's not the end, that there's always next year and there's always learning for life. And you know, here you are doing all this interesting nonfiction writing, you know, as a grown up.
Totally, that's right. And the stuff that I did in school, I mostly really didn't enjoy, and I mostly found it really, really hard, unless it would happen to be really interesting. And then you get out of high school and you can study stuff that you're actually interested in. And I went on to do a PhD because I was so interested in that. And I didn't need to finish high school to do that. And so, yeah, there's always lots of different options.
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Well, lovely chatting to you tonight. The Seeker's Garden and Food Freedom Community are available where all good books are sold and online, I see. Thank you so much for chatting to us, and all the best with your journey. We look forward to interviewing you again very soon with your next book.
Oh, great. Thanks very much.
Well, another great show here in lockdown Tamaki Makaurau.
Absolutely, lots of variety. I hope our audience are enjoying this variety. It's really rich. And of course, if you have something to share with us, email us at info@kickarts.org.nz.
And remember, it doesn't mean that you're doing something literally now or this week. It may be that you're working towards something, or maybe you've done something in the past and you just want to talk about what you've been doing in the world of art.
Absolutely. Speaking of which, Emma, remember a few weeks ago we had the team in from Tautai, and they were promoting the Pacific Arts Residency?
Yes.
Well, they are proud to announce that Auckland-based artist and producer Whaumau Matthew Salipu, better known as Anonymous, is the recipient of their new residency. So congratulations. And he was part of the group that did a massive workshop back in 2019, exploring Indigenous conversations. So in a second, we're going to exit with the track that they created with students from that workshop. But a big, huge congratulations. We love getting the follow-up as well when we've interviewed someone.
Definitely.
Well, let's see what the next week brings us, Emma.
Yeah, hopefully an announcement tomorrow. Oh no, it's not another till for another week, is it, that the big Monday announcement comes?
No, You'll have to hang on. I hope everyone's having a wonderful Labour weekend, though. And next week, we're going to chat to someone all the way in Germany. So make sure you join us. Have
Definitely.
A fabulous week. Here is That Us, the Indigenous Pride from Tautai's Fresh Horizons workshop back in 2019. Have a great week. Remember to...
kick some arts.
Being stereotyped is normalized. We as a family, we should realize that we as people, we should try and break the stereotypes and aim high.
Take me back to the days in the sun, where all my tokos and usos just run. No time to worry, just time for fun. Then on their Sunday, pray to the Holy One. Hey, island life is my favorite thing. Just a young fop trying to reach my dreams. Yeah, I'm grateful for everything that my parents do so I can succeed.
This is who I am. This is who I am. I'm a proud son, I'm stands tall like my dad. My mama inspired me to do things that I want, so I can make my parents proud by doing things I love.
Anecta to the new generation.
For my family, for what they do for me, I got the island pride. Everything's gonna be alright. For my family, for what they do for me, I got the island pride. Everything's gonna be alright. For my family. For what they do for me, I got that island pride. Everything's gonna be alright. For my family, for what they do for me, I got that island pride. Everything's gonna be alright.
We're all islanders, island kings and queens. We pull our crowns up, then we do our lean. I ain't no Michael Jackson, ain't got no Billie Jean, but I'm a proud believer in many island things, like respect and humility. You need to lull yourself to learn something. Offer up to all who be listening, be proud of who you are and what you wanna be.
Cause there's no limit to what we can do, just have a positive view and stay true, true to you.
To the new generation, I'll say I don't.
Like the Bible says, Jesus is the light. So love one another, look out for each other. Work together and make this dream last forever. Don't you ever think about giving up. Just thank the Lord from above, screaming hallelujah.
We are one family.
Let's make a change and live happily, yeah.
See you in a week. Don't forget to
to brush your teeth and don't forget to go to sleep. We'll be going live same time under the stars, saying blah 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 blah. Let's